Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to the Randomly Generated History Club, where three non-historians pick a year at random and try to learn things about it. I'm Anna, and I'm here with my two friends, Will and Ant.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. This week we're talking...
Or should I say, boo.
Oh. Ah! Because you don't like anything that I'm doing right now.
Boo. No, because I'm spooky.
That's right.
It's a spooky day today.
It is Halloween. Happy Halloween to those
All
who
Saints
celebrate.
Day.
Hope you are full of tricks and not treats.
Pumpkins.
And pumpkins. I hope you are full of
most
pumpkins.
Most overrated vegetable, by the way.
Yeah.
Nothing good about pumpkin.
Is it a vegetable?
Yeah. Is pumpkin a vegetable?
I don't know. You know how some of them are like, oh, a tomato is actually a fruit. Avocado is actually a fruit. I feel like, and like peanuts aren't nuts. They're legumes.
Oh,
like,
okay. Is a pumpkin I'm pretty sure pumpkins are fruit.
Is a pumpkin a fruit?
It's a fruit.
What?
Yeah, because it's the product of the seed-bearing structure of flowering plants.
Okay, boo me then.
Boo you. Boo you. But yay, 1989, which is the year we're talking about today, as chosen by our noble and generous patron, Christine.
Is it true that she is the most beautiful person to ever have existed?
It is true.
And smartest?
Yeah. It was like Helen of Troy for a really long time, and then Christine.
And you too can be the most beautiful, intelligent person in the world if you just donate to our Patreon.
Since Christine.
Since Christine. Yeah. Sorry, Christine.
Summon the that bitch off our perch.
Yeah, I guess you're about to be usurped. But yeah, that's right. We will take money from anyone and bless you with our favor. So let's do our three-word previews. Ant, you want to give yours?
Not so evolved.
Not so evolved, unlike Christine, who is highly evolved.
Yes, for sure.
And Will?
Aliens and communism.
Oh my God. Never the twain shall meet.
Finally, the truth will out.
I know. All right, my three words are why, just cause.
Nice.
Just cause or just cause?
Indeed.
Yeah. Interesting.
All right, so let's go ahead and get started then. All right, I'm up first today, and I want to address the elephant in the room, which is the fact that upon hijacking the random number generator and choosing the year 1989, Christine, our noble and beautiful and intelligent patron, did so with the intention that I would talk about Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Now, as is customary with our podcast, I prepared my report on Taylor Swift and fed it to the random number generator to gain its approval. Mm-hmm. In this instance, it did reject.
It was too good.
It rejected my proposal. Yeah. And it said that no one who is still creating this much history can be discussed on the podcast, and that it hopes we're all enjoying 1989 Taylor's version. So we are going to record a Taylor Swift special for the Patreon where you can enjoy the tidbits that I drummed up about the queen of the universe.
I've learned so much about her as well, studying
yeah.
for this.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So many facts.
I did. I set you a really rigorous exam.
Did you know that she's 13 foot tall?
She is. Don't give away all the facts. You'll have to save it for the Patreon.
Many more to come from.
So instead of talking about Taylor Swift, I am talking about the next best thing, which is baseless U.S. military invasions of other countries.
This will be a short episode.
Yeah, I'm just going to read a list. No, today specifically, we'll be talking about Panama and then the U.S. invasion of Panama in 1989. So our story today begins with a man named Manuel Noriega. Have you heard of him?
I have heard of him, yeah. Yes. Inventor of the hat. In Panama.
Inventor of the hat, digger of the canal.
Yes.
Yeah, he's a man of many talents. So in the 60s and 70s, Noriega was a rising star in Panama. He was in the military and he ultimately became the country's head of intelligence and was basically a fixer for Omar Torrijos, who was the dictator of the time, never actually the president. And Noriega is described as doing Torrijos's dirty work, like throwing a priest out of a helicopter.
That's pretty dirty.
Pretty
work.
Dirty.
Really?
Yeah. And the priest's crime was that his agricultural cooperative was seen as a threat to Panama
that's
government.
Fair enough, then, yeah.
Controlling the prices of corn.
That's right. So out of the helicopter he went. So that just sets the scene a little bit about what Noriega is like as a person. He ultimately gets involved in drug trafficking, which brings him to the attention of the U.S., and he's seen by the U.S. as an obstacle in their quest to combat drug trafficking in Central and South America. And they consider assassinating him, of course.
Mm-hmm, as you do.
That's what the U.S.
Get the helicopter.
Is good at. Yeah, right. Hoisted by his own petard. But this is where it gets interesting. Even though the U.S. knows he's involved in the drug trade, they also hire him as an informant for the CIA.
The old classic conflict of interest.
Yeah. Keep your friends close. Keep your enemies as paid informants of your intelligence apparatus.
He's informing on himself.
Yeah. Well, in fact, his drug dealers got protection against DEA investigation because of his relationship with the CIA.
Wow.
And it's estimated that he was earning $100,000 or $200,000 a year from the U.S.
Wow.
Yeah. He was snitching on the Sandinista government in Nicaragua, as well as the goings-on in Cuba, since Central America was this huge proxy battleground for the Cold War. And there are Soviet forces and the U.S. is very keen on opposing. And so they are using Noriega as an informant. However, as you may imagine, he's also selling intelligence back to Cuba on the U.S.
Genius.
And they know about this as well. The CIA is aware of this as well. So it's this super complicated relationship. And it's really at its height when George H.W. Bush is director of the CIA.
Uh-huh.
In the 70s. And then, of course, he becomes vice president to Reagan and president he's elected in 1988. So Omar Torrijos, the dictator, dies in a plane crash in 1981. It's an accident, of course. And then coincidentally, Noriega takes over from him, gradually accumulating more power, largely through using the military as his sort of power apparatus. That's the Panama Defense Forces, or PDF, which is what the file format is named after.
Well, a little known fact.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's just the service we provide on the little known facts. So every time you save a PDF, you are supporting the Panama Defense Forces. Noriega gets money from the U.S. to modernize and expand the PDF. And then in 1983, through some shady maneuvering, he becomes the de facto ruler of Panama. He's not elected, but elections don't matter. And as is inevitable, given how complicated the web is, the relationship between Noriega and the U.S. starts to decline. Because even though Bush is now the vice president, it's becoming harder and harder to value the intel Noriega provides over the bad things he does, like running the drug trade and murdering people. And so eventually the U.S. starts to pull back from supporting him and thinking of him as this valuable asset. In May 1989, there's an election in Panama. How do you think it went?
Was it a free and fair election that passed without trouble?
It was not. That's right. The opposition candidate won, but Noriega voided the results and blamed foreign interference.
Yeah.
Probably some truth there, but the U.S. decides that the opposition candidate did win and they treat him as the president.
And the U.S. does get to decide all elections in the Americas.
That's true. That's our sphere of influence, also known as the globe. Noriega disagrees with this statement by the U.S. There are a few coup attempts against him, but he prevails. And in October 1989, he declares himself the maximum leader of the country. Which is very good. Yeah. Really good. Supreme leader, you know, maximum we don't leader. Need a maximum leader.
Wow.
Yeah.
How big was he?
Maximum.
How many Taylor Swifts was he?
Well, now the U.S. is getting a little bit agitated, and it doesn't help that as his relationship with the U.S. is deteriorating, Noriega shifts his allegiance towards the Soviets. Mm-hmm. He gets closer to Cuba, Nicaragua, and Libya. And so the U.S. starts drawing up contingency plans mm-hmm. to invade Panama if
they had to.
Should need arise.
But they didn't need to.
Well, no, of course not. On December 13th, 1989, Taylor Allison Swift is born in Reading, Pennsylvania. On December 15th, Panama passes a resolution declaring that a state of war exists between Panama and the U.S.
Taylor Swift.
And Taylor Swift, especially Taylor Swift.
Coincidence? I don't think so.
I don't know. You decide. And then the next day on December 16th, four U.S. servicemen in Panama are stopped at a PDF checkpoint. The official stance is that they were unarmed and just going to dinner together, but the Panamanian officials maintain that they were armed. Regardless, in the confrontation, a U.S. Marine is shot and killed, and this becomes the catalyst for the invasion. So on December 20th, the U.S. invades, and it's actually the largest military action since the Vietnam War.
Wow.
Which I thought was interesting. And according to Bush, H.W. Bush, who's now the president, there are four objectives. Number one, safeguarding the lives of the 35,000 U.S. citizens in Panama. Number two, defending democracy and human rights. Mm. Number three, combating drug trafficking. And number four, protecting the integrity of the Torrijos-Carter treaties, which were around the neutrality of the Panama Canal. This whole protracted move to give the canal back to Panama's control. And it's obviously hugely strategically important to the U.S. And so they want to make sure that the canal can continue to be a neutral zone.
Maximum importance.
Maximum leadership importance. The U.S. public is hugely in support of this invasion. We weren't able to track down how Taylor Swift, as a one-week-old infant, felt about it. But the country as a whole gave it around 80% approval.
And we can take a look at we can sort of draw a trend line back from her current politics, can't
we? Yeah, we can.
So we can see that she'd almost certainly have been in favor of a wider invasion of neighboring countries as well.
I think if you actually, you know, she famously hides secret messages in her liner notes. And I think a lot of them espouse a sort of scorched earth policy towards Central America.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah.
She also never wears hats.
That's true. Have you ever seen Taylor Swift with
a
hat
once.
On? Yeah.
Never.
There you go.
Agreed.
It's because of her giant 13-foot head.
So in addition to having Taylor Swift's support, it was very popular in Panama as well, with 92% of people supporting the invasion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And a lot of people actually wish that the U.S. had intervened earlier and taken over during the failed coup attempt. So, that was interesting. The invasion is pretty quick. The priority is finding Noriega. The U.S. sinks his boat and destroys his jet to try to prevent him from leaving the country. And he remains at large for a few days before realizing he can't outrun the U.S. forever. He seeks refuge in the Apostolic Nunciature of the Diplomatic Mission of the Holy See in Panama City. So basically claiming asylum in the Vatican Embassy.
Oh, wow.
U.S. forces can't invade the embassy because that's, you know, Vatican territory.
Because God won't let them.
Because God won't let them. Primarily because God won't let them. So they set up a perimeter around it and try various strategies to get him out, including my favorite, blaring rock music at super loud volumes because Noriega hates rock music. Would you like to guess what band they chose in particular? Ooh, 1989.
Is it going to be something like AC/DC?
Close.
Meatloaf.
If you combine AC/DC and Meatloaf, you get the answer, which is Van Halen.
Nice. Oh, that's actually, do you know what? That is pretty much an exact combination of the two.
Pretty good, right? So they blare Van Halen. I'm sure the poor Vatican ambassador is also miserable about this, but Noriega...
Did he want to jump out the window?
Nice. Very good. Can I have another one?
Was there an eruption of anger?
Was he hopping mad? No.
That's not.
Is that a Van Halen
hop,
song?
Jump. Oh.
Panama is also one of their songs.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I wonder if it was about this.
And that's all the songs I know.
Okay, good. Well, after 10 days of listening to Jump on repeat, Noriega surrenders. He's extradited to the U.S. and charged with a whole host of things, drug trafficking, racketeering, etc. Does anybody actually know what racketeering is?
That's like just, I think it's just like what we call side hustles these days. So all those TikTok influencers telling you how to get rich quick.
He's a grifter.
Yeah.
It's a hustle, the hustle economy.
He's reselling sneakers or something.
Well, he's ultimately sentenced to 40 years in prison. He's released after 17 years for good behavior. But unfortunately, he'd also been convicted for various crimes by a bunch of other countries. And so he essentially spends the remainder of his life in prison. And he died in 2017. Just a few other little facts before I wrap up. The operation involved the unprecedented use of women in the U.S. Army.
One. At that time, it was one woman.
I think it was literally, I was like, ooh, unprecedented. How many? And it was 600 out of 26,000. So.
Yeah. Was it really? Is that the actual number?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, okay. They didn't serve in direct combat roles, but this was the
Good
first
Lord, no.
time they were. No, obviously. Guns are heavy. This is the first time they were really involved in the effort. But Captain Linda Bray was said to be the first woman to lead U.S. troops in battle after she and her squadron endured a 3-hour firefight against PDF troops. So good on you, Linda. The UN General Assembly passed a resolution declaring the invasion unlawful, and a similar resolution was put forward in the Security Council, but vetoed by the US, the UK, and France. Thanks, buddies. And it was almost certainly illegal under US law as well, since Bush didn't get congressional approval before invading Panama.
Oops. YOLO.
And then one final note on the name. You'll remember my three words were why, just cause. The operation was originally called Operation Blue Spoon, but it was renamed Operation Just Cause, C-A-U-S-E, to sustain the perceived legitimacy of the invasion. But critics refer to it as Just Cause, it had been undertaken just because Bush felt like it.
Pretty funny.
Wow. It's pretty good.
Yeah. I have one small fact actually about Noriega.
Okay.
So back in the early days of 2010 sometimes, the Call of Duty game, he is a character in it with the code name, I think it's Lost Prophet or like a False Prophet or something like that.
Okay.
And he sued them.
Really?
In his 80s, he sued them for like defamation and that kind of stuff. And so there you go. So he's still going strong in the early 2010s sometime.
That is...
Yeah, I think it was False Prophet. Yeah.
That's a good code name.
Very good.
I was reading his Wikipedia and there was a picture of him and I was like, oh my God, he looked rough. And then I realized it was a still from that game. And I was like, okay, that makes a little more sense. So that's that. That's the 1989 U.S. invasion of Panama.
Okay, this week I'm going to talk about an alleged incident involving a UFO in Voronezh in Russia. And let's get one thing out the way immediately,
it
straight
was
off the bat.
Taylor Swift.
It must have been the arrival on Earth of our Lord and Messiah, Taylor Swift. No, I mean, basically, none of this happened, right? Because it's about an alien. So
wink, wink. Yeah, okay.
You can all judge for yourselves, but it's pretty unlikely. I mean, come on. So, but anyway, there we go. So this was basically an alien sighting reported by a group of children.
Okay.
Nothing more credible than a child.
As a man that grew up in Ireland, where there's every single mile, there's a different statue that a bunch of kids saw moving. So I'm in. I believe this straight away.
So it was on September the 27th, mm-hmm. 1989. So I guess it couldn't have been Swifty.
No, she would have been near term.
Okay, so this could be a kind of premonition. Okay, so as a result, so this area naturally has been very popular with UFO hunters mm-hmm. ever since, and so all the local community massively support the furthering of this rumor in a kind of Loch Nessy kind of way.
Yeah, the UFO economy.
Right, exactly.
Area 51, you know, yeah, that stuff.
Yeah,
exactly.
Where 100% of the economy is based on selling Area 51 trinkets and stuff like that.
And like leasing film rights to Hollywood,
exactly.
Like letting them film on site.
So according to the Soviet news agency TASS, the boys were playing football in a city park and saw, quote, a pink glow in the sky and then saw a deep red ball about 3 meters in diameter. The ball circled, vanished, then it reappeared minutes later and hovered, end quote.
Here's my first question. Mm. How old were the boys? What I want to know is, had they learned the concept of diameter yet? Because already the story could fall apart.
It could be the sun. As well.
So they were teenagers.
They were teen. Okay, so
young
they probably
teenagers.
Knew diameter.
They know diameter.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Is
I'm all in then. I believe them.
Yep. Checks out.
2 pi r. No, hang on. That's circumference.
Apple pie delicious.
Nope. Something.
Cherry pi r squared.
Diameter is just twice the radius.
Yeah, exactly.
2 r.
It's just your classic.
Pie.
Just draw a line from the middle out. And then keep the line going the other direction.
Do the same thing in
reverse. Twice.
Yeah. That's basically what they learned. That is Russian education system for sure.
They learn more than me. Okay, so these children claim to have also seen a, quote, three-eyed alien, unquote, wearing bronze-colored boots and a disc on the chest.
A disc?
A disc on the chest and a robot. And they saw both that alien and the robot exiting this object. And then according to the children, the alien then used a ray gun to make a 16-year-old boy disappear until the object departed and then the boy reappeared.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. So there's some quite specific claims we've got
Very
here.
Very specific claims.
I'd like to know more about the disc on the chest.
And the bronze boots. That's a brave choice.
To be fair, it sounds pretty bold. Sounds sort of Bowie-esque.
Yeah, exactly. I think I think that's one of the most remarkable things about this is how there's a fashion sense of the aliens.
Yeah.
And what that tells us about their culture.
Yeah, and can they please bring that fashion-forward attitude
They're at least
Earth?
Bronze Age technology.
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah, and...
When was the disc invented?
When was the disc invented? Yeah.
So he zaps the boy.
Right.
Boy disappears.
Yeah.
How long does the ball hover for? The craft?
Sometime.
And then it disappears and the boy reappears.
That is correct.
Was there a sound effect? Because we can judge which era of sci-fi they were influenced by the sound effect.
Yeah, was it more of a pew?
It was a Star Trek star. Yeah. Sorry, go on. Is there more to this?
I mean, there's not much more because obviously it's all bullshit, right? But I mean, there's more detail which we can remain similarly dubious
more
of.
More about the disc. More about the disc.
So the children were the only ones claiming to have witnessed the aliens.
Yeah.
And then later on, a guy called Lieutenant Sergei Matyevev from the Voronezh police also claimed to have seen a, quote, body flying in the sky.
Okay. So
he saw something moving in the sky.
Was it a priest being thrown out of a helicopter?
And I love the reaction from the Interior Ministry as a whole, who basically said they'd dispatch troops if it reappeared.
That's so Russian. Sure.
Yeah,
let us know if it comes back.
Right, yeah, exactly. So a little more detail on the claim. So on October the 9th, so what's that, a couple of weeks later?
Yeah.
TASS reported that a correspondent had spoken to 10 or 12 youths who claimed to have seen this flying saucer. And in the original article, there was a quote from a Dr. Silanov from the geophysical laboratory who confirmed the location of the landing, he said, using biolocation techniques.
Oh!
Biolocation.
And it turned out the method of biolocation was basically them using dowsing rods.
Okay.
Okay.
Which is... yeah, I mean, there's not entire confidence in that method of
location. Is dowsing rods a thing in the US as well? Or is it like just kind of quackery in the UK and stuff?
Oh, no, we definitely have
it. Yeah, so you hold sticks or a
it's
stick.
It's quackery everywhere, okay. To be clear.
No, it's real here. It's real to me. Yeah. The thing is, though, all right, with any basic kind of oceanic country, if you dig down enough in any place in that country, you hit water.
Yes.
So you can get a dowsing rod and just walk anywhere.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
And say, dig here.
Yeah.
And if you dig for far enough, you get water.
I mean, Voronezh is not particularly oceanic in the sense that it's in the middle of Russia, which is far from the sea.
Yeah, but still, like, pretty much there's water tables going to be there somewhere.
There's water somewhere.
There's water somewhere.
There's always water somewhere. Basically, the center of the earth is water. It's my hypothesis.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt.
All those volcanoes spewing out fizzy water.
Jets of water.
Which is exactly what they do, isn't
it?
And then Perrier bottling it up.
That's right.
Volcanic water. It's where it comes from.
Yeah, big
sparkling. So this report then became one of a series of reports that were then publicized by the Soviet government.
Uh-huh.
As they were then seeking to kind of show their openness during this time period of like they're kind of like that they wouldn't repress stories like
this is glasnost.
Yeah, basically. It's just like it got kind of caught up in glasnost. So,
yeah.
so then they're basically setting themselves apart, like in saying, well, in America all these stories get repressed,
yeah,
and the authorities don't tell you the truth, whereas here we're telling you all everything that's happening.
Yeah, we're so much better. Look, we'll tell you all about the robots and the disc on his chest.
So there were then hundreds of these reports over the next sort of couple of years, and in the initial publicity, a private company that was formed to then sell tours of the place. So immediately started to exploit the thing.
That's quite a capitalistic endeavor for a nominally still communist country.
Well, that was the mood at the time.
Yeah.
And so they did tours billed as tours of the land of aliens for 59 rubles each, which is like $95 per person.
$95?
Wow, that's a lot of money.
And then outside of Russia, a US current affairs show even sent a crew over to try and report on the thing. So basically everyone got totally carried away.
Yes.
But as the investigations continued, it turned out that, really no one could ever come up with any really, really hard evidence the thing ever happened.
Did anyone interview the boy that disappeared? Or like, what was his account?
Did he
just suddenly wake up? It was a blink of an eye for him.
Do you know who that boy later became? Vladimir Putin.
That's exactly who he became.
Yep. That's the truth Russia doesn't want you to know.
Yeah. That's it. Because famously at the time, as mayor of... where is he mayor of? St. Petersburg at the time.
Yeah, at age 16.
He was a boy.
Yeah, he was a boy. He was the boy mayor of St. Petersburg. That's what everyone calls him.
Putin was 37.
16, yeah, exactly.
Exactly, 16-year-old.
It turned him into a... He aged from 16 to 37.
Right. That's what happened. That's right.
He's mayoring remotely.
That blink of an eye was 21 years for him. He came back an old man.
Hang on. This is a sci-fi show. Oh God! Oh, that's depressing.
So there are a whole bunch of like proper tests were done, by the way, and then I'll just to wrap up. So there were 16 radiometric analyses, 19 checks of ground around the area, and 9 tests for microorganisms and other sort of chemical tests.
Yeah,
and none of it unearthed any evidence that there was anything untoward.
And one biodetection.
And the successful biodetection.
Oh, sorry,
via dowsing rod.
Successful dowsing rod experiment.
Yeah.
So there you have it. You can make your own minds up. This is the UFO incident in Voronezh. In 1989.
I want to believe.
I do believe.
Putin, 100%. Please write in if you could and tell us your account of what happened to you while you disappeared for 21 years.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, my turn. Not so evolved. Given that it is Halloween, spooky, scary, spooktober that it is, it's going to be a mystery that I'm going to talk about. But first, we have to go back further in time a bit. So we're going to be discussing these spooky and weird events that happened in the 1930s in the tropical paradise that is the Galapagos Islands. This, as we all know, is an island chain about 1,000 kilometers off the coast of Ecuador and owned by Ecuador. Famous for Darwin in the 1800s when he came up with spurious lies about evolution.
but this podcast brought to you by the Catholic Church.
But this is now the setting for our strange tale dubbed the Galapagos Affair.
Can I make a motion that we refer to them as the Galapagos Islands?
Oh, the Galapagos Affair. Yeah, that's great. It's a mystery unsolved to this day, by the way. So if anyone has any solutions to this, please write in. There's a reward. So
is there?
Yeah, okay. I'm going to offer up £10 million.
Ooh.
Yes, and a turtle that I found. Story begins in 1929 when a German doctor by the name of Friedrich Ritter and his lover, Dor Strouch,
Let's sure on that one.
What a sexy name.
Oh, sorry, hang on.
Dor Strouch.
D-O-R-E, maybe Dory. Dory Strouch, Dor Strouch.
Can I get a spelling on Strouch?
S-T-R-A-U-C-H.
Yeah.
There you go. So anyway, Dor and Ritter decide to abandon their lives in Berlin to start anew on the island of Florina, which is one of the islands in the chain. They sought a life of solitude and connection with nature. Ritter, who was a massive fan of Nietzsche, and he thought of himself as Nietzsche's sort of Übermensch, which is this idealized Superman. And so he wanted to like test himself and prove himself. So to prepare for this and leaving Germany and his wife with his lover, he decided to remove his teeth because he was convinced his gums would toughen up on the island and he knew there was no dentistry.
Oh my God.
Yes. So he just removed his teeth and left. So Dor, who was actually his patient, who was suffering from MS, multiple sclerosis, and Ritter's prescription was that any illness could be dealt with through sheer force of will and just to toughen up.
And teeth removal.
So Dor was madly in love and she followed him there. And
this gumless wonder.
Yes, oh, gumless wonder.
He's got gums.
He has gums, but he was gummy. It was a very tough and austere life they led on this island alone. So tough, in fact, that soon Dor's teeth were pretty infected and giving her jib. So he also removed her teeth.
Oh God. I hate teeth stuff.
Yeah. Ugh. So these two gummies etched out a living on the island. There was limited water at times of the year. They cleared some land and lived basically a Neolithic lifestyle.
Wow.
But as you might suspect, they kind of grew a bit madder. They were known to wander the island naked and passing ships would speak of them. They fell out with each other all the time and they would go days without talking to each other.
Do you know what the population of the islands were?
Two.
It's literally just them on this island.
It's literally just them on this island.
Wow.
That's
horrible.
Like no one lived in the Galapagos.
Yeah.
There were some people that would come and go from the main island.
Yeah.
And there's a settlement that was a little
like
bit older there,
but like,
but a bit older, yeah. A few more people there, but in this island, just two.
Oof.
And so they grew to hate each other effectively, and sort of lived next to each other, but you know, wandering naked. But they were there basically for the spiritual and emotional transformation that they wanted to have. And they wrote poetry and philosophical things and all kind of stuff and wrote letters home and that kind of stuff. But it was clear that this harsh conditions and the isolation weighed heavily on them. And this was echoed in their writings and back home and that kind of stuff.
Oh God, their poetry must have been such shit.
Oh yeah.
emo and...
And the thing is, ships would pass and dock from time to time, mainly whalers, and they'd bring back tales of these strange, weird people living there, naked on the island. They'd bring back letters and stuff as some sort of maybe alternative living commune kind of thing. And this myth actually spread, and it was published in the US and in Europe. And so guess what? More people decided to come.
Oh, God.
And so the next...
What part of this is appealing?
Yeah, well, you don't have to be weighed down to the burden of teeth.
that's true. Or clothes.
Whistling
or
becomes
sanity.
So much more effective. And so the next group came, which were the Wittmers from Germany. So Margaret, the mother, Heinz, the father, and their 15-year-old son, Harry.
Oh, my God.
Yes. And Margaret was pregnant.
Oh.
And so Margaret figured, well, we know that Ritter is a doctor, so he can, Ritter is a doctor, so he can help us give birth. Anyway, they arrived in Florina with a dream of a simpler life, but they actually brought with them sort of conventional expectations, like, I don't know, let's build a nice house, uh-huh. let's have animals, uh-huh. let's grow vegetables and not just scavenge and that kind of stuff. So the Wittmers saw in Florina this chance for a fresh start. They're really helpful about the health prospects for their son, who had some health issues, but they wanted to establish a more traditional settlement, and that sort of butted against the ideas of the other two on the
sure.
island. So even though they were now neighbors, the relationship between the two groups was very, very frosty, as they sort of basically saw that they were like living it wrong and doing it wrong. And they barely interacted or spoke. And yes, the animosity was stoked even further when yet another group arrived.
Oh my God.
This group, again, opposed to the other two, was headed by one Eloise Werborn de Wagner Bosquet, a self-styled baroness.
Right.
Of the Hamburg Busquets?
Yes, exactly. She arrived to the island with her two young lovers and a machine gun.
All right. Eloise copies my packing list.
Yeah. So her two lovers were called Robert Philipson and Rudolf Lorenz. And they were in like this sort of open relationship type thing. She like...
Sure.
Like just brought two boys to
yeah,
Juliana,
no,
basically.
I see no problem with
yeah,
this.
So she proclaimed herself as the Empress of the island, and she sort of laid down her plan to the others there of her intention to build a luxury hotel on the island to bring hordes of people from Hollywood and the likes to come to this island paradise. So these three sort of groups of people sort of completely at odds with each other.
Yeah.
Tensions among the settlers were inevitable. Ritter and Strouch's disdain for the societal norms clashed with Whitmer's more conventional aspirations. The Baroness's antics, her territorial claims, and her attempts to control the island's resources exacerbated conflicts. She was doing things like she would go down to the beach in her bikini and sort of coo at sailors going by in an attempt to drum up the island's reputation for having beautiful women, etc.
Sure.
Drum up the sort of like, oh, this exotic paradise. There was clashes over pretty much everything.
What did she do with the machine gun?
She just basically had it.
Okay.
It's just had it.
Yeah, she wasn't like shooting tortoises or something.
No, I think she kind of shot some animals and stuff, but sure. nothing crazy. Nothing super crazy. There's clashes over almost everything. Access to water, animals wandering through, the open relationship the Baroness had. There was just palpable animosity. Another complex part of this was that Rudolf, one of the lovers, would sometimes seek refuge with the Whitmores, claiming that Eloise was abusive and preferred Robert over him. So the Whitmores took him in. Margaret thought him, though secretly, to be weak and resented him taking their supplies.
Oh my God.
Some other people thinking that there might have been a tryst amongst Margaret as well. So there's entangling the groups even further.
This genuinely sounds like it could be a reality TV show on air right now.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Some executive is going to hear this and think...
Let's recreate it. So things grew even more heated because Ritter and Strouch suspected the Baroness of intercepting their mail. So they would send mail back.
it's so funny to me that they were getting mail.
Well, like they would send it, it'd take months to get back or yeah. whatever. But they'd send mail and then they'd get newspapers back months later.
Yeah.
And they'd realize that some of their letters were being published.
Oh.
So some of their letters were being published as Tales from the Crazy Islanders and heavily editorialized and sensationalized and then sort of aggrandizing Eloise as the leader of this island and that kind of stuff. And these troublesome reprobates rolling around without any teeth. So potentially Eloise was doing this.
Yeah.
We actually don't know. To drum up more interest in the island and build a mystique, etc. To get funding to build a hotel and that kind of stuff. And so things came to a head, as they do. One day in 1934, Eloise and Robert disappeared. No trace left behind. Margaret claimed that the Baroness and Robert had been picked up by some friends in a yacht and headed to Tahiti.
Sure.
Unfortunately, the ship never arrived at Tahiti, and no one else saw the ship, and no record of any ship visiting the island. ever appeared anywhere else in any other record. So Margaret's account is not backed up by anybody.
Oh my gosh. She did it.
She ate them?
We don't know. Question mark.
Shortly after, Rudolph, now alone, he sought the company of others on the island. So, not really welcome with the Whitmores, he went to Ritter and Strauch, but tensions rose because he could like chew things, I guess. And so eventually he did decide to leave. He teamed up with a Norwegian fisherman to leave to go to nearby Santa Cruz and onto the mainland. But tragedy hit. Sometime later, they were both found dead on the beach of Martina Island, suspected to have died from dehydration.
Him and the Norwegian fisherman. It's
not known how they got there, how they went off course, how long they were there, how they didn't find water. Like, it was a pretty austere island, but like, it's very suspicious that they would hang around long enough to die from dehydration. So another mystery there. Mm. And again, soon after this, still in 1934, Dr. Ritter died. The exact cause is under debate, but was speculated to be food poisoning after some boiled chicken was prepared during a particularly time of where there's very little water on the island. So it's unusual in that Strauch didn't get food poisoning because they ate the same thing and didn't get sickness for something so serious that could kill a guy. And the accounts of his death differ from Strauch and Margaret. Strauch says that he lost his ability to speak and passed away quietly. Margaret said that he was effing and blinding and accused Strauch of poisoning him. So,
God, I will say Margaret likes to tell tales.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure Margaret is a trustworthy character.
And so Margaret and Dore both wrote memoirs later on. Dore returned to Germany and wrote her memoirs and eventually died in 1943.
Yeah.
And like her story and account of things completely, like nearly everything sort of contradicts Margaret's accounts and other accounts as well.
Yeah.
Like no one has the same two accounts of any one story effectively. Heinz, the father, inventor of sauces.
and beans.
And beans.
Canner of beans.
In 1963 on the island. But Margaret went on to live until the year 2000. I said 200, 2000. She wrote a book about the whole thing called Florina, A Woman's Pilgrimage to the Galapagos, which narrated her version of events. And all the conflict and all that kind of stuff. But we don't really know what actually happened.
Yeah.
The Galapagos affairs remains one of the most tantalizing unsolved mysteries of the 20th century. And there's no definitive answer. It's just a lot of intrigue surrounding it. And it's only grown with time. The story has been subject to numerous books, articles, and even a documentary done in 2014, which you can watch on YouTube.
Can and will.
It's very interesting. And it shows the animosity, because some actual footage and photographs of the time. All attempting to piece together this puzzle. So it's totally nuts. And the documentary goes into way more detail. 1989?
Yeah, I was about to ask.
The book, The Galapagos Affair, which was a big deep dive and one of the first big exposés on the, like, you know, there's accounts of it, but this is like, wait, this doesn't match up.
Yeah.
Was written by a man named John Treherne. It was published in 1983, but he died
We're getting closer to 89.
The paperback came out in...
yeah.
The paperback came out in 1985.
The made-for-TV movie was in 87.
No, no, he died in 1989 in Swindon.
Oh my god!
Well, the guy who wrote the book.
Yeah.
The guy who wrote the book about the island.
A book about it.
But died in Swindon.
And just a bit more about him. His other famous works.
No.
Included The Strange History of Bonnie and Clyde and The Dangerous Precincts. And that's it. That's my bit about 1989.
The most tenuous connection.
That's worse than anything I've ever done.
I think that's true. It's topped only by Ant's other big number one.
You don't even want to know what The Dangerous Precincts is about?
No.
It's a gripping account of the false accusations made by against the Archdeacon of Stow and the highly questionable trial which he was subjected, following which he was deprived of his ministry of Lincoln Cathedral. There you go. That's another book that he did. But he died in 1989.
But he died. And what was his name? Did you even tell us his name?
Yes, I did. His name was John Treherne.
John
Treherne.
Okay.
Very famous author.
One of the towering figures of the 20th century.
He actually was pretty well known in circles. He's friends with like some really famous people, like actresses and stuff like that. I think he was like one of the cool set. I think. Yeah, he was. Trust me, he was.
I mean, at this point, I'll never trust you again. But I did enjoy learning about the Galapagos affair.
Diana Dors, who's friends with, and Desmond Morris. Famous people of the time. You're welcome.
Unbelievable.
You could have just covered him.
When you said the book came out in 1983, I was like, where are we going? Oh my God. 1989, one of the most consequential years in human history.
You're welcome.
The death of John Traherne. All right, everyone, thanks for joining us. That's everything you'd ever need to know about minor authors who died in the year 1989 and UFOs that may or may not have portended the coming of Taylor Swift.
This is definitely our spookiest episode.
It's absolutely our spookiest episode.
All that's left to do then is fire up the random number generator and find out what random author we're going to be talking about next.
Okay, so as a reminder, we set the random number generator to choose a year between 1000 BCE and 2000 CE, and the year for next week is 1743.
Good.
Ooh.
I know exactly what I'm going
to
do.
You already know which semi-famous person who
John
died
Grisham.
In that year. That's right, John Grisham the first. Okay, amazing. Well, if you want to hear our Taylor Swift mini episode, join the Patreon.
So
and
good.
Then
yes.
You too can be as beautiful and intelligent as Christine.
I've also been posting some extra stuff there. I don't know if you've seen this, but I wanted to convince my girlfriend to get an Indian takeaway, and so I made a funny
I
video.
I did see
for
that.
Her.
Yeah. It was quite funny.
I've never been able to successfully log into the Patreon, so I have
that's
not seen it.
That's true. Yeah.
Basically, I'm hilarious, Anna, and I want you to agree
with believe it. Good. I believe it. We also will have, a new episode of our continuing League of Lies,
League of Lies
competition coming up on the Patreon
that's
as
true.
Well.
So if you like lies,
patreon.com/randomly.
Want to support us? That'd be great.
All right. And in the meantime, we will see you in 2 weeks for 1743.
See you then.
Happy Halloween.
Bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. Go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.